I'm struck by that phrase in that last reading we had, though. I'll just read it out for you. We take hold of the hope offered to us that we may be greatly encouraged. The hope that is offered to us is the hope that we see not only through the scriptures, but so much in the book of Joshua. There's a movement that came out of America, and not everything that comes out of America is bad, but there was a movement that came out of America and still continues today called the Promise Keepers. It's a movement that involves men gathering together and keeping promises, hence the name Promise Keepers. The idea is to live faithfully for Christ, and they have seven promises. Here they are summarised. Promise number one, they promise to be committed to honouring Jesus Christ. Good promise to start with, isn't it? Number two, committed to being accountable to other men, that is, being in an accountability group. Committed to practicing spiritual, moral, ethical, and sexual purity. Committed to building strong marriages and families, that's number four. Number five, committed to supporting the mission of the church in which they worship. Number six, committed to the unity of the church. And number seven, committed to influencing the world in which they live. That's that idea of being committed to the communities in which God has planted them. All good, aren't they? Good promises, whether you're male or female. But none of those promises, and in fact, the group itself, could not exist if it didn't have one essential element. And the essential element is this. You can't have a Promise Keepers group or anything else without the ultimate Promise Keeper. That's actually the message of the book of Joshua. It's actually the message of the whole Bible too. But what we see throughout the book of Joshua, and particularly in this opening chapter, is that God is the ultimate Promise Keeper. But a bit of background first. Book of Joshua, who's Joshua? Where does the book of Joshua fit in the whole Bible story? What's it all about? Well, it's the sixth book of the Bible, which means it's straight after the great big Exodus event. And that's very important. The great big Exodus event, in case you don't know, and I don't always assume that everybody does, but it's so important to understand a little bit of the context. God chooses His people. He said to Abraham, I will be your God and you will be my people. And he continued to reiterate that promise. He makes promises to Abraham. Promises that he'll have many descendants. A promise that he will give him a land. And a promise that one of his descendants will be a blessing to all the world. Now when you think about those promises, they sound like great promises. But in our eyes, when you consider the context, they're impossible. How old was Abraham and his wife Sarah when God made the promise that you'll have lots of descendants? They were in their 90s and they didn't have any children. That's a pretty impressive promise. He says to them, I'll give you land. And then he tells them, get up and move. So the land that they did have is now gone. And he says, and I will make you a blessing to all the world, which I find incredible because, to be honest, Abraham's a nobody. He's not a great king. He's not a great military leader. He's just a bloke, a faithful follower of God. God, though, is the ultimate Promise Keeper. And so those promises start to come to fruition, don't they? The descendants one. How does that happen? Well, through God's grace and mercy, in their 90s, Abraham and Sarah have a child, Isaac. Isaac has two. Jacob and Esau. Look, there you go. 100% improvement already. Jacob has 12 sons. I'm not going to repeat all their names. But you know how the story continues, don't you? And by the time you get to the end of the book of Genesis, you've got a whole nation. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of them. But they all live in Egypt as slaves. And so God then begins to bring to fruition his second promise, the idea of land. And so he saves them out of Egypt. You know the story of Moses and all the plagues. And they wander through the wilderness for a couple of months. until they get to the very edge of the promised land, the land that was promised to them. And they send 12 spies in there just to check it out, make sure it's the right one. And they come back, and that's where it all goes bad. All but the hierarchy, that is, all but Moses, Aaron, Caleb, and Joshua, say, yeah, it's really good land, but we can't take it. They are too big, they are too strong, and their cities are fortified. And they rebel against God and the promise to give them the promised land. And so God turns them around. And they wander in the desert for 40 years. Not, they weren't lost. But they wander in the desert for 40 years until every single adult over the age of 20 when they first rebelled, except for Joshua, Caleb, and Aaron, dies in the desert. And then God brings them back to that same spot on the edge of the promised land and says, second chance. And that's where the book of Joshua starts. Have a look with me, Joshua chapter 1, verse 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give them to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country, to the great sea on the west. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I'll be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Here they are, on the edge, second chance to take the land that God promised to them. It's actually very easy, though, for us to fall into a little trap here as we begin the book of Joshua. And the trap that we can fall into is to think that it's all about Joshua and what Joshua does. It's very easy for us to think Joshua is the one who needs to be strong and courageous. And that is true. And there's nothing wrong with being strong and courageous. In fact, we're going to get to that in a few moments. But it's so important for us to see, not only here in the first chapter of Joshua, and throughout Joshua, and throughout the whole Bible, that it's God who's acting. That He is the ultimate promise keeper. Just see again in verse 2. What does it say? This is God speaking. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give them. And just in case you missed it in verse 2, and you thought, I'll just skip over verse 2, look at verse 3. This is again God speaking, I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. And even Joshua gets the message and picks it up in verse 10. So Joshua ordered the officers of the people, go throughout the camp and tell the people, get your supplies ready. 3 days from now, you will cross over the Jordan, here to go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God is giving you for your own. It's all about God and how God acts. He is the ultimate promise keeper. He has kept His promise about the descendants of Abraham. He will keep His promise about giving them the land, even if that promise takes 600 years to fulfill, because it's 600 years since Abraham when we start the book of Joshua. There are so many changes going on, though, that there are even more promises that God makes. When I think about it, and it's interesting to try and put yourself in people's shoes, can you imagine what it would have been like to be either Joshua or one of the people about to go into the promised land, and the huge change that has occurred? Moses had led these people for 40 years, and now he's gone, and there's a new leader on the scene. What's it like to be under a leader for so long and then have a completely new leader? Well, you've only got to look at Egypt at the moment. What about our own parish? You know, we've had some long-standing rectors and then a new one comes on the block. Lots of changes. And what about the fact that these people were people who wandered around in the desert as basically nomadic herds people? But what are they soon going to become? They're going to become settled, agricultural sort of groupings with cities. No more wandering around in the desert with their herds. Huge changes occurring. And so God promises that in all these changes, as they move into this promised land and as they take possession of it, that he will never leave them. Have a look in verse 5. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous. God is the ultimate promise keeper. God is the one who acts all through Joshua, all through the Bible. Our response? Be strong and courageous in the promises that God makes. So that's where the strong and courageous bit comes in. Joshua is told to be strong and courageous, not in his own strength, not in his own muscle and ability and intelligence, but in the promises that God makes and he will fulfill. Have a look, verse 6, just see. Be strong and courageous because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to my forefathers to give them. Joshua can be strong and courageous because God has sworn, God has promised that he will fulfill what he said he will do. And then in verse, a bit further down in verse 7, we see this idea of being strong and courageous again. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it from the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. God has given his people the word of the Lord, the law, basically the first five books of the Bible. Meditate on it. Be strong and courageous because of what you've got. And then finally, in verse 9, be strong and courageous. Why? Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Everything that Joshua and the people, in a sense, are told to be strong and courageous in is based upon who God is and what God has done. For God is the ultimate promise keeper. And the same is true for us. We may not be leaders of Israel, taking them into the promised land. In fact, to be honest, that job's already been done. But each of us have our own missions and ministries to be involved in, don't we? Aren't we all a royal priesthood of believers? Aren't we all involved in the ministry of God, committed to Jesus, committed to each other, and committed to our communities? Does not God equip his people for that role, for that ministry? He makes the promises. He comes through on his part. Our response, because of what God has done, is to be strong and courageous in that, to be doggedly determined, is another way of putting it. God acts. We respond. We see it in Joshua. We see it all the way through the Bible. But there was one other promise, wasn't there, to Abraham? Now, there was the land, the descendants, but what about that one, the blessing to all the world? Where does that one fit in? What you see throughout the book of Joshua, in fact, before and after as well, is that God is a God who acts. And the story of Joshua and everything that comes before it and after it shows the pattern in which God acts. It's a typology in which God acts. Consider this. God chooses people. I will be your God. You will be my people. He then saves those people because they're in slavery. He takes them through the wilderness, puts them in the promised land, and he does all this through a leader. Have you seen that pattern somewhere else? Well, what about the idea of God choosing people? Ephesians chapter 1. For God chose us before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. See the same idea. God chooses people. What about the idea of having to rescue people from slavery? None of us have been slaves in Egypt, have we? Not to my knowledge. But according to the Apostle Paul in the book of Ephesians, for it is by grace, book of Romans, but thanks be to God that though you used to be slaves to sin, and the idea of God saving those people through great acts, Ephesians chapter 2, for it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves, it is the gift of God. What is that gift of God? It's salvation through Christ, the death on the cross in our place, that great act of salvation. What about the idea of God taking people through the wilderness? Can you see that anywhere else in the scriptures? Well, the Apostle Peter speaks about being foreigners here on earth, being pilgrims in the wilderness and living for God as he takes us to a new land. Have you seen that somewhere else before? Again, the Apostle Peter, but in keeping with his promise, we are looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth. Do you see that same pattern? God chooses people who are in slavery. He saves them from that slavery. He leads those people through the wilderness, as it were, to the promised land. And he does it all through a person. It was Moses and then Joshua for the people of Israel. Who is it in the New Testament? It's Christ. Prophet, priest, king, just like Moses and Joshua. And interestingly enough, how do you say Jesus in Hebrew? And pardon my pronunciation. It's Yeshua, which is translated into English as what? Joshua. See, God shows how he will save and how he will keep that promise to a blessing to all the world. God has acted in the Old Testament in a physical way to show what he is going to do through Christ. Choose people. People in slavery to sin. He will save them by grace and through the death of his son on the cross. He will lead them through the wilderness of this world to the promised land of heaven through his leader, Jesus. No matter what your challenges are, no matter what the fears are that you live through at this time, the message of Joshua, the message of the scriptures, is this. God is the ultimate promise keeper. And he never breaks them. He is the one who will never leave us nor forsake us. He is the one who says, you are mine. He is the one, because of who he is and because of what he has done, he is the one in whom we can be strong and courageous. Let me pray for us. Father, we thank you for your word. And we thank you that you are a God who makes promises and keeps them. You are the ultimate promise keeper, Lord. And we thank you for those promises on which our hope is firmly established. The hope of Christ. The hope of grace and mercy in him. The hope that we will never be forsaken or forgotten. The hope that we will stand in your presence forever. May we be people, Lord, who are strong and courageous, not in our own strength, but in who you are and in what you have done.